Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. It's great to have you with us today. My name is Henrik. This is Red Ice Radio. We are, as always, very glad and honored to have you with us. It's always good to be able to speak with you. We are doing a video version of this show today, by the way, so if you want to see that, please check out our website, redice.tv. That's the best place to find more of our radio shows. You can also see our videos, our live broadcasts that we do on the weekends, and also some of our news, of course. Also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. This is one of the best ways to get some of the latest content directly to you, help get our subscriber numbers up there, and also, of course, spread the word about the show to some of your friends and family. We are an anti-globalist media outlet, fiercely independent, supported by members and supporters like you. We are pro-nationalist. We think that every people, wherever they are, needs a nation of their own and have a right to self-determination, free from internationalists telling us how to live, moralize over us, lording over us, and our unique cultures. Today we have back on the show Styx Hex and Hammer 666. We did a video segment with him a few months ago on the esoteric connections to Keck or Pepe. Some really interesting deep currents that is going on within the success of the alt-right phenomena and some of the occult undertones to this that people have been using when it comes to memetics and some of the occult information warfare. Really interesting stuff. Do check it out if you missed that segment. But welcome back to the show, Styx. I mean, I'm just going to call you Styx. I kept tripping up on your name last time for some reason. So anyway, it's good to have you back, Styx. Thank you so much for joining us.
Fine by me. Thanks for having me.
Sure, you bet. It's good to have you back. You know, I wanted to get you on because I wanted to do a little bit more in-depth on certain issues that we kind of didn't have time to talk about. You're very knowledgeable. You're an author. You're an editor. You've been involved in more esoteric occult subjects, you know, kind of for a long time. Just briefly, because we didn't touch on this last time, for people who don't know your work, just tell us about some of the things that you've kind of been into the last few years so they get an idea of where you're coming from.
Well, for the most part, most of my work is involved with trying to release editions of out of print or out of copyright occult works. As some people have pointed out, a lot of these are available for free online. That's true, but these facsimiles, sometimes they're not in the greatest condition. I think there's something to be said for paperbacks. The bibliophile in me wants physical copies of books, not digital. I understand a lot of people do. Others, they want actual paper that they can hold in their hands. I've written several books of my own over the last few years. Now, and in general, just trying to increase people's knowledge of the occult. My opinions on the occult, they're not hegemonic. There are different opinions on, you know, various subjects, of course. I've talked about, you know, occultism within the Harry Potter series, the overlap between that and more genuine occultism, and the Necronomicon, everything from that sort of Hollywood-esque occultism through the more historical, maybe more, you could say, adequate side of occultism from a historical perspective. And I do this because I'm just interested in people knowing about it. It's something that interests me, too. I wouldn't speak about it if it weren't of personal interest.
Very good. So, you know, one of the things that I wanted to address with you a little bit today as well is the things that have started popping up lately in terms of Pizzagate, some of the accusations of, you know, the satanic connections within the elite. And although that I frankly think that there's something to it, maybe we can discuss this in more detail, but I don't think that these people that we're talking about are very knowledgeable in a lot of these kinds of issues. They're very profane, if you will, in this regard, but they have some kind of romantic idea of what it is. There's something that's maybe appealing within these ideas. It's almost, in a way, to make a crude analogy, it's almost in the same way that maybe, you know, you have a Hollywood version of a Nazi, and some people are for some reason attracted to that kind of image of it. And these people seem to be almost attracted to like the cartoon version of like a Satanist or something like that. But with everything, Styx, that we've seen from, you know, the spirit cooking issue with Marina Abrahamovich to the later emails from John Podesta leading this whole rabbit trail into Pizzagate. What's your kind of overview on this issue, and how have you gone about looking at all of this?
Well, I would have to speak about it on the first token, because I've had some people misconstrue what I've said as defending Podesta or Clinton. I don't support these people. I do find the emails he sent to be creepy. I don't pretend to know about his personal life, but the way he speaks in his emails creeps me out too. And I say that as somebody who, you know, believes in all the witchy stuff. It's creepy. He seems to have a slightly bizarre fixation with not just pizza, but, you know, little kids and what they're going to be doing in the pool and things like that. The spirit cooking side is a little different. That's a performance art sort of thing. It's a mock-up of ritualism. But today's modern artists, I use this analogy. It's sort of like the then-modern art that existed back in the period of Dadaism or something like that. Back then, the art represented nothing, and they admitted that it represented nothing. That was the whole point. The whole point was anti-art, sort of a statement on culture. It's, you know, it's confused, it makes no sense, it's degraded, and we're sort of reveling in that fact. Today's modern artists are simply less honest Dadaists. That is, their art also represents little to nothing, but they pretend that it does. They say, oh, it's up to your interpretation. What Abramovich's, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, what her spirit cooking stuff represents is the pastime of maybe the bored social elites, the bored political elites. They want to feel like they're part of something spooky. They want to get that sort of roller coaster experience, but they don't actually want to go to an occult meeting because it would scare the piss out of them, honestly. If they understood what the occult actually was, they wouldn't even be involved in what they're involved in because they don't have the self-control for it. If we assume that Podesta, for example, and I don't make this assumption because it would not be fair under our legal system, you're supposed to be considered innocent until proven guilty. He's probably guilty of a million things, but I have to assume that he's not. But if we assume for a moment that he's a pervert, that he's utterly corrupt, his actions in being so preclude self-control. He would be, if he's a pedophile, for example, while he's going out and harming, it's like it's an urge, a destructive urge within him that at some point could get him thrown in jail. I've had this problem with people who talk about Crowley, for example, Crowley.
Right.
He was an opiate addict. He didn't have the self-control to beat that addiction. How would he have the self-control to study the occult? So from the occult angle, I say I don't believe that many people in D.C. have the self-control or the urge, the drive or the urge, the self-control or the patience to study the authentic occult. If they're studying anything, it's more like Anton LaVey's stuff. You know, Anton LaVey's dark rituals, they're atheistic. They were a mockery of the Catholic Mass. People who are trying to blame Satanists of all groups, if you want to blame occultists, and say there's some elite cabal practicing dark magic, at least you're identifying that occultists are intelligent enough to organize such a thing. Satanism doesn't even include that. Satanism is literally atheism with a floor show. Anton LaVey was a pervert, too. He just wanted to see women nude on the altar, so he said, hey, conduct a dark ritual with me. Here, get naked. We'll blaspheme Jesus Christ. And there you go. He got to see their boobs. That's essentially what it boiled down to within the Church of Satan, and still does to this day.
So there seems, though, to be a genuine kind of carnal fascination. I mean, if we look at the the artwork of the Podestas, of the artwork even inside Comet Ping Pong, and again, it's very, I mean, it's there is something there that's extremely creepy, and there is a fascination with young children and these kinds of things. And I mean, I think in the emails, there's definitely something to this code word. I mean, they wouldn't use these words with like pasta and cheese in the way that they do if it wasn't something there. I think people make the association immediately that it's like, okay, this is a Luciferian kind of issue, right? And they're doing this to Satan or something like that. But it feels to me that it's like they are, as you say, they might be fascinated by this because somehow they think it's giving them some supernatural power or something like that, right? It still comes from a perspective of being extremely, in their mind, rebellious. They want to rebel maybe against Western values and Western society, and they equate that with Christianity, for example. So they go in the opposite direction of what they think that is. But you know, having said that, though, there's something with a carnality to this which is extremely disturbing. What do you think about that?
It seems so. It is. It's weird. It's warped. It's, at the very least, it's questionable behavior. It's probably worse than that. The thing is, the fact that Podesta or people around Podesta would be perverted, let's say they are, and You know, you can make a seasoned argument for that. Let's assume they are. That doesn't necessarily mean they have an understanding of the actual occult. Any imagery that they would be using, if we assume spirit cooking is the sort of stuff that they're into, it's a mockery. It's a mock-up ritualism. It's like if you take the Ouija board out and you conduct the seance and you turn around and say Bloody Mary in the mirror and you read up all the creepypasta posts on X or something like that. It's not the genuine occult. It seems like it. It's dark and spooky. It has all the trappings of the occult. That's why it's been perpetuated, because it's basically occult light. It's the safe version of the occult for people that don't have the patience or the training or the inclination to study reams and reams of mathematical equations or geometry or astronomy or anything like that, or to go into some of these old Renaissance-era works. People like myself can only make them so accessible. Sometimes they're not even accessible to us.
Right.
They're still only in Latin. The only translation is from 10 years ago. It's from some obscure sub-German dialect or something like that. I can't imagine that somebody who apparently spends all of his time in a pizza parlor is spending very much time researching the arcane. That being said, all the art in Comet Pizza is probably the strangest of all. It is weird. It's definitely perverted. That goes without saying. But that's not occult imagery. I've never come across in my travels across the occult anything that closely resembles that. In fact, most of the genuine occult works, they actually stress you're supposed to be almost an ascetic. You're supposed to give up all forms of sexuality or nearly so. You have to give up the fine food, the alcohol, anything else that would be considered more of a sense pleasure is either forbidden outright, or at the very least, it's severely limited. It's situational, for instance. You can have sex, but only with your spouse, and only under this phase of the moon, or something like that. That's literally every grimoire that I've ever encountered has this sort of stuff, including the diabolical materials. Spirit cooking would be more on the, if we assume that that's some ritual trapping, it's diabolical in nature. Well, it's not being taken from any grimoire tradition I know of. That goes into the separate conspiracy, sort of the Book of the Devil or Satan's Bible sort of stuff. Oh, well, it is authentic occultism, but it's not the occult that you have access to because it's some singular lost tome in the Vatican archives or selling Bohemian Grove owns. I doubt that. Understanding what I do about literary history alone, I doubt that that would be the case.
Okay, there's an aspect to this I want to discuss later in terms of what that really entails versus what they're doing, but I wanted to kind of emphasize the point you made that it seems that this is kind of like, what's the term, cosplay, cosplay, right, that they're involved in. It's kind of it's a facsimile. It's something which seems not genuine. I mean, I was actually thinking if it is true then that they actually are into this carnality, which is actually involving children, etc. I was thinking maybe there is actually a connection to them trying to frighten children with this kind of almost stereotypical, you know, devil worship and imagery and things like that. I mean, I don't know if you recall, but even in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, they were very high into the drug culture, of course, you know, Hunter S. Thompson and these people. And they described something called adrenochrome, where apparently they kind of tortured victims, I guess, or frightened them. And then they were actually, I don't know if it was the blood that they were drinking or if it was just the fluid from the adrenal gland or something like that. But apparently that is some kind of super high or something like that. And who knows? Maybe this is an outcropping of what they're involved in when they're involved in some of the satanic rituals and stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be some sort of cultism. Maybe they do torture people in the basement. But again, historically speaking, there's nothing about that in any significant occult lore. There are some demonolatry tracts, very modern ones, that would contain that. It's like the Book of Appen. Originally, it was sort of a veterinary grimoire, and that sort of material back then. It's contained in the Petit Albert. It's contained in other texts. It would have been considered sort of like an herbal medicine tract. Somebody very recently pretended that they obtained a copy of this now apparently extinct book's lineage and translated it, but what it really was a modern demonolatry tract that comes from very much post-80s or 90s sort of occultism. So it's entirely possible that they're following some sort of new wave of magic thing, but it's not authentic occultism. It's not rooted in some ancient tradition from Babylon or Sumeria or even, you know, the Renaissance or anything. It's not coming from Da Vinci or Agrippa or anything like that. At the very earliest, it would come from the post-Blavatsky era, even the Theosophists and so forth. They had their sexual proclivities. I don't know that they were involved in ritual torture or anything like that.
Right.
And all of this material is publicly accessible. It's just people need to have the will to look for it. There are literally hundreds of thousands of tomes of magic out there if you know where to look. You can use archive.org. You can use Amazon, eBay. It's all over the place. People, because they don't know about it, they fear it intrinsically. They've never studied it. They're taking some pastor's words or priest's words and assuming that this has something to do with devil worship or magic. And they're tarnishing the name magic with the actions of what might be a bunch of perverts who are probably just going through a midlife crisis and emulating reverse Christianity, sort of LaVey style, something along those lines.
Well, it's an interesting point, you know, because one of the things that was mentioned in one of the emails was that someone's going to sacrifice a chicken in their backyard to Moloch, right?
Yeah, and of course, was Clinton, actually.
Was it Clinton? Yeah.
Yeah, that was Hillary herself.
And, I mean, that's interesting because obviously one of the code words in there for chicken, I believe, was a little girl, if I'm not mistaken, or little boy, one or the other. And you have the connection to, of course, the kind of a decadent elite at the Bohemian Grove that are kind of very much in the same way. They're into Moloch. But it's a very theatrical display at Bohemian Grove. But what do you think it entails when Hillary says these things about a chicken to Moloch?
Probably it's just a joke about literally sacrificing a chicken. I think sometimes a cigar, I guess, is just a cigar. The thing about the elites, I think, that we need to consider is the possibility that they've seized upon the joke of Bohemian Grove. I think Nixon called it the most faggoty thing he had ever seen.
That's right.
And was talking about people running around nude and pissing on trees out in the open and so forth. That's basically just a daycare for the bored, childlike minds of people that have pretended that making a lot of money has made them happy. They're actually miserable. They want to go out and pretend to be Boy Scouts and pretend to be 15 again. Yeah, that situation probably spawns a lot of perverts, especially the kind that maybe like them a little bit younger pizza, let's say, instead of the stuff that you get frozen that's 20 years old half the time and has cardboard crust. Bohemian Grove has, of course, like the Moloch statue, or what they say is a Moloch statue. The ritualism there is a mock-up, too. The cremation of care, which Alex Jones himself had to crawl in and document, is quite literally the burning of an effigy. It's literally a symbol of, oh, well, we stopped caring at some point. They're burning literally care itself. But it's a mock-up, and they're not reading from some grimoire. They're just standing around having a bonfire. It's no different from a drunken college students. They get drunk, they get wasted, they have the bonfire, then they have an orgy or something like that. The difference is we look at them. We assume that because they're rich that they're also very smart and very diabolical. I see them as a bunch of egotistical backstabbers. All of the predictions that I make within politics rely upon the supposition that these people actually are as unhinged as we think. There's no secret cabal controlling things, and that a bunch of monkeys in suits have the nuclear triggers. Honestly, that's more concerning to me than the idea that they're actually a bunch of black-robed occultists. But this particular ritualism, which goes hand-in-hand with Hillary's apparent joke there, is a mock-up. The idea of like sacrificing a chicken to Moloch is sort of a joke about, I guess, some primitive people that are worshipping some sort of totem, doing animal sacrifices or something like that. That's at least what I would say it's probably about.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you that, you know, if this level of understanding of the elite helps us to kind of discredit them, then I'm all for it, to be honest, of us exposing them of their true nature. Because as you say, we must remember that many of these people, they are literally the people who are running our world today. I mean, they have immense levels of power, and it seems that it's almost like on top of it, there comes a kind of a maybe a dissatisfaction and a boredom of having achieved all these things that, you know, who knows, maybe they've already had all the prostitutes that they can ever dream of, all the drug parties in the world, right? At some point, they want to try to have more or something, right? I think that level of carnality comes into it at that instant. Push down the age or something, and maybe that will get them going or something. You know what I mean? It's like some sick behavior like that.
And did you notice the the media has done relatively little for years and years. It's not like the whole Bohemian Grove sort of satanic conspiracy stuff is new. It's always been fringe, but it's not new. They did nothing for years and years to discredit it until people proclaimed that they were sexual perverts. Now, what I see in that is this. The elite would rather you and I and your viewers and everyone else under the sun, they would rather us believe that they're large and in charge and part of a cabal than for us to understand that they're just as confused, hopeless, and nihilistic as many other people in the world. That being said, they don't care if you perpetuate the idea that they're worshiping the devil, because it scares you. It actually helps keep you in line. You become more averse to trying to tangle with them. You think that it's hopeless. The Christians especially will think, well, we can't do anything about it. They're agents of the Antichrist. It's faded. We can be religious all we want, but all we can do is pray. We can't vote them out because we'll never successfully get rid of them. They'll ignore any maverick candidate that actually comes along that seeks to liberate them from this crap. We can't stop globalism. It's inevitable. There will be one world order under the 666 beast sort of stuff. And they become pacifistic. They don't fight back. That their level of corruption is so sheer that when it's actually spoken of, it's spoken of in spiritual terms. And they love it. But when you start suggesting that level of criminality, when you suggest that there's the possibility that some of these people, Anthony Weiner, I'll speak about in a second here, are perverts, that's when the legacy media decides to rise up in rank to defend them. Because, oh, crap, oh, there goes all our money if these people start going to jail. I think the most damaging bit of evidence was when WikiLeaks, and I trust WikiLeaks, and most people, I guess, who are sane to some extent do, when they compiled that infographic from Reddit, which I don't use, by the way, in full disclosure to the 4chan audience. I don't use Reddit, never have, just as an aside. That infographic shows Anthony Weiner involved directly or indirectly with a group in Haiti that was apparently blamed for child trafficking. Now, Anthony Weiner is the spouse of Huma, the number two person under Hillary herself. Anything Huma Abedin's doing, Hillary's going to know about it. And her husband is not only sexting a 15-year-old, which is pretty damning under the Pizzagate sort of circumstances, he's at least indirectly involved in literal child trafficking in Haiti. While the ex-president of the Senate of Haiti, not a few days before, comes out and says, oh, yeah, they were using their, what was it, NGO or whatever it was in Haiti, their charity movements, to smuggle drugs. They weren't here to help us. They weren't here to feed anyone. We're still starving. They didn't rebuild anything. We're still living in squalor. They just wanted cocaine, heroin, things like that. They wanted to route it through Haiti. It was cheaper. It was easier. They put them in cereal boxes, shipped them out to the United States. So we've got to think about this logically. There's definitely scandal here. Something they're being protected for, whether it's child trafficking or dark occult ritual abuse. It's almost a moot point. We don't know. We know there's something going on here, though. I will admit that completely. It's the Clintons. What do you expect? That they're going to be honest? I don't think so.
No, I mean, they've been running the drug business in America for many, many years out of Arkansas, and there's a whole, you know, back in the 90s, there was a lot of good research being done on these kinds of issues. There's still a lot of documentaries actually online that I recommend people look up, like the MENA Connection and these kinds of, you know, YouTube videos still up there. A lot of interesting stuff that really implicates or demonstrates how deeply involved the Clintons really are in this sense. Another thing that you mentioned, which is interesting, is the kind of that, you know, this capacity to kind of almost terrify people in a sense of these prospects of them being devil worshippers or Satanists or something like that. I mean, that in itself kind of is an occult warfare of sorts, of psychologically instilling people kind of a sense of fear that they maybe it makes them seem more powerful than they actually are. Now, I'm not saying that, of course, that all of this with Pizzagate is fake news. As you say, I think that the reaction that we've gotten to Pizzagate is that the mainstream media has now started to go after. I mean, this comes in the wake of Edgar Madison Welch, of course, who actually walked in, if we were to believe that story, walked in with an AR-15 or something into Comet Ping Pong, the pizza joint, and apparently started, you know, shooting around. Again, we don't know. From the outside, we don't know what the hell happened in there or what actually who this guy is. So there's a lot of questions there. But my point is, the reactions to this was basically, oh my God, this is fake news and it's actually hurting real people, right? So we have to put a stop to this. Several people that talked about Pizzagate were getting their videos censored on YouTube. Facebook is now starting about, you know, talking about having credibility ratings on articles. Google is going to develop some kind of algorithm that's going to tell us whether the story is accurate or not. So it seems that they're, however we view this, they're using the Pizzagate thing to really spearhead the kind of censorship that we've seen, you know, in the wings for a long time, right?
Yeah. How convenient it is that both the legacy politicians and the legacy media get to shield one another because of this issue. When you want to know who is conducting something, look first at the person who's benefiting from it. So when someone gets murdered, who has the motive? You look for a motive, obviously, if you want to find who is responsible, because it's more likely that it was someone with a motive than that it was just some random psycho shooting people. If we look at what's happening with the so-called fake news, which encompasses, you know, coincidentally, everything that's not funded by the same corporations that paid for Hillary Clinton, if we look at the treatment of these issues by them, they're almost ignoring the original claims. They're saying nothing about them. All they point out is it's fake. It's a conspiracy theory. Oh, and by the way, somehow the Russians were involved. And you should be scared of them because they were, I guess, communists 20 years ago. That's become their universal cop-out. But the damning part is they laid the groundwork for this before any of this really mattered. The legacy media wasn't even really talking about this. And all of a sudden, we get the wild claim on right after the first leaks began to happen from the Clinton campaign. People need to think about this. The first leaks happen. Immediately, Clinton says, maybe it was Russia. And what's his name? Kane or, you know, whatever his name was, is her running mate that nobody remembers already. He comes in and says, oh, it was Russia and these WikiLeaks drops. Those are doctored and this is fake news, blah, blah, blah. It's because they're terrified of the fact that people have their info. They're probably laying the groundwork because they're afraid there are more leaks coming. They're probably terrified. Now, another thing people need to ask before, because the Russia stuff is the second layer of propaganda on top of sort of the Pizzagate Satanism stuff. If WikiLeaks is an agent of Putin and Trump is Putin's friend or pawn or partner, whatever he is, why are they also going after John Bolton right now? Why are they also going after the Tillerson there and all these others and dumping documents on them? Of course, Bolton was a big Iraq war figure. Why are they dumping? I would think they wouldn't want to denigrate Trump's cabinet picks, and yet they're dumping this material too. And it begins to denigrate, actually, the argument that Clinton made all along. I think what the media is doing is trying not to report on that by instituting all of this other witch hunt crap, this sensationalism, to distract people from what's actually going on. Because if they wrap their heads around the fact that WikiLeaks especially was telling the truth the whole time, Clinton would be in a jail cell. They're trying to protect her to some degree, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting, you know, because, you know, again, I've said that. I think there's something here. I mean, this ugly head of pedophile networks have reared its head so many times through history, you know, from the finders out of Washington, D.C., to this, you know, the investigations that John DeCamp did out of, Nebraska, of Boys Town, and these kinds of things. There's a lot of shady, weird, you know, disgusting things here, connecting with Jimmy Savile and these networks that are global, basically. So there's something here that I think that they're afraid enough of that to kind of, basically, because we saw a reaction after Pizzagate, which was interesting. It was basically, oh my God, this is, you know, real people are getting hurt and we have to stop this. And this really, when they cranked up, you know, the issues about fake news and things like that. And it seems that this was enough of an issue that people started looking into and picking apart that it can open up a lot of things. It can drag a whole lot of other issues with it down, you know, because Podesta, that whole thing opened all these avenues that people have now consequently started researching. And of course, Pizzagate is not the only issue that I definitely grant grant people, but it's a central issue, I think, in terms of how deep this goes and really what the nature of the globalists and these internationalist elites that we're dealing with stick.
Yeah. And every time the very materialistic political elite that makes money off of drugs or human trafficking, which they do, it's fairly clear, indirectly or directly again, every time a scandal gets close to unraveling somebody that could cause the whole house of cards to topple down, who do they blame? Devil worshippers. Some imaginary group comprised of cult members, as opposed to the actual culprit, which is people in D.C. People, some megachurch pastor who donates to people in D.C. Some corporate head who donates to people in D.C. Some banking partner who funds D.C. Or some other government. Every time, it always appears to be that as soon as it gets close to somebody who's, again, either in a political position or associated with politics, the magical satanic panic boogeyman gets trotted back out all over again. That's basically what happens. It's sort of like the Salem witch trials, of course. The main theory now behind the Salem witch trials, the similarity there, is that it was essentially a property dispute. And the claimants of witchcraft were using their daughters in order to indicate that all of the people whose properties they wanted or who could challenge them politically within their community were witches. And so they had to be killed. Well, once they were dead, and I think there was one individual there who refused to admit that he was a witch, and so they pressed him to death, and they never got his property. They got all the other properties that they wanted, though. They got all the political power. They ended up absorbing all of the property. And the way that they did this was, oh, well, they're a cultist. They practice magic. I wonder if DC takes up the same line now and would rather blame a bunch of randomly chosen Wiccans and Satanists, who primarily they're just sitting there smoking weed all day, for their problems. Now, it seems like a perfect scapegoat to me because the majority of the U.S. population views them negatively. They use them as a scapegoat. They would use some randomly chosen kid who wears the leather jacket and listens to Metallica and praises Satan all day or something like that. They'll use them as a scapegoat. My child disappeared. Oh, it must have been that local lunatic that sprayed the swastika on the grave that time. And it sounds a lot similar, too, to the magical Nazis that are dreamed up, in the wake of Trump winning. All of a sudden, swastikas are everywhere.
That's right.
All of a sudden, every Jew is at hazard. All of a sudden, every minority is at hazard of being deported, and hate speech just seems to proliferate so massively. But look who actually benefits from that. It's not Trump supporters. It makes them look insane. It's not actual nationalists. It makes them look like a bunch of friggin' lunatics. Now, the people who benefit are the people who don't like those groups, people that lost the election and are now very afraid.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, keep in mind here, too, the kind of rhetoric and mentality that the pastors have been, spewing from their culprits. Yeah. These Zionist pastors, ever since the Scofield Bible, have been manipulating the Protestant majority in America to support a foreign policy which is completely alien to American interests. I mean, let's go back to the bigger issue here. The Iraq war, the war in Libya, Afghanistan, all these kind of wars that really have... That's the fake news right there. These are the big issues that the mainstream never touch on. They never discuss any of these kinds of issues. And these are, of course, here is where you have the death toll. Here is where you have the justification for the drugs being run all over the world. It's very interesting.
Yeah, 500,000 nationalists in Iraq get burned up alive, basically, by Al-Qaeda and, in the crossfires, our own troops move in through shock and awe. The same media groups that are now being declared the credible media agencies, CNN and so forth, they all listened to the government back in 2002 into 2003 when they said Saddam had WMDs, Saddam's purging his own people, Saddam's trying to get nukes, Saddam has the ability somehow to nuke us. And everybody listened to that in the wake of 9/11, because they were afraid, honestly. What are they trying to do now? They're trying to make people afraid, honestly. They all listened to them. The legacy media regurgitated that to the public, got them all whipped up, and then said, oh, the government has evidence of all this, but don't ask for it, because, it's classified, just like they're doing now again with the CIA and Russian involvement in the election. They said, oh, yeah, we got to go march off to war. And then Bush comes out, mission accomplished, a few months later, like that was ever true. They're trying to pull the same lie again. Unfortunately, it's probably going to work because people watching this are probably awake. They're watching it online. They're tech literate. They're checking out social media. On every social media platform, the lamestream media is losing handily. They get their ass handed to them in every comment section if they haven't shut comments off. And if they do, they don't get shared around as much, and they die anyway, so it's sort of a lose-lose for them. But a lot of people still watch TV. Back, I can remember, shock and awe era, everyone was tuned into, like, live CNN on their color TVs, the old ones that made buzzing sounds when you just turned them on and so forth. You know, there wasn't all the technology we have now. They were watching it live on TV. That means that the information, so-called, that they got on that was coming from the legacy media, the same legacy media that right now is telling you Pizzagate, number one, isn't real. Don't think too much into perverted stuff. Number two, every other news source is fake. You shouldn't listen to them. And by the way, just ignore the fact that we told you the Iraq war was a good idea. Clinton, too, oddly enough at the time. They're trying to pull the same lies again on people. They don't even realize it half the time.
Yeah, I was just listing some of the lies there, you know, about how America got into the Iraq war, some of the support for it. One of the things that's kind of a side note, which I find interesting, is the alignment that seems to happen with the kind of an anti-globalist coalition now that Trump has kind of really spearheaded around the world. I mean, he's actually opened conversations with a lot of leaders that previously were kind of locked out by the foreign policy that America has held. Even Duterte, for example, in the Philippines, which has actually been very hard on cracking down on some of these drug networks. I mean, you probably recall, Stix, that, you know, before America invaded Afghanistan, the Taliban had actually put a lot of suppression on the opium production in Afghanistan, and actually post invasion, that's when the production started up again. And they, you know, they've shipped out opium even in body bags out of Afghanistan and these kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. So there's a financial incentive by the globalist elite to kind of to keep these puppets in place, to keep all these people playing ball. But I think with Duterte, with Trump, with a couple of leaders that are on the rise right now in Europe, we're seeing a shift right now, actually. We're seeing, they might not be perfect, I'm not saying that, but there's something that goes in a different direction, which is very encouraging to me. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree. They would be mild reformers in, I mean, you know, if you believe in nationalism, most of these people aren't even civic nationalists, honestly. But the reform is going in the right direction. You've got to take care of globalism before you can decide what else you're having anyway. That's Europe's problem. Europe has both far-right, so-called, and far-left regimes. Economically, totally different. Socially, they're totally different. The EU tries to lump them together and tells them they can't self-determine. When the EU cracks apart, it doesn't really matter whether they end up socialist regimes or populist regimes or what they end up, because they'll be deciding that for themselves. Now, Italy is going in that direction. Austria narrowly avoided joining sort of, you know, the liberation movement of the world against sort of this force of overarching corruption. France, we have to wait and see. Taiwan, I think right now, would be another testament to what Trump's doing. For a long time, China has been sort of the supplier in globalist trade. And he pointed out, and I think he's right here, that the intent of the TPP, other than not really being a trade deal in most aspects anyway, was to draw together Asia, eventually admitting China, to allow China to ship its goods out even more inexpensively. Maybe we'd be the ones in Africa right now, and they would ship direct to us because it would be cheaper to do so. Again, right now they're trying to colonize half of East Africa. People don't know that either. And the Africans, by the way, are getting tired of it. They're turning into nationalists. By recognizing Taiwan, and even questioning the idea that there's just one China, Trump is throwing a wrench in their plans and trying to bring them crashing to their feet. And the funny part is, China's the original gangster of globalism. Tibet is its own sovereign nation. Taiwan, at this point, is its own sovereign nation. Mainland China is essentially just a communist bloc of rebels that broke away from the original liberalized Western government of China that's now in exile in Taiwan. Trump has done what no president's done in many years, which is recognize that to be the historical fact. He's not even directly confronting them, and look at how hot under the collar they're getting. Another reason he'd do this, Japan's already friendly with Western interests. The Philippines, he's softballing the Philippines. Obama would rather say, oh, human rights abuses, terrible things. That's because so many Western businessmen, middle management consultants, when they get their 2 weeks off, they go out to the Philippines or Thailand, and they hire underage prostitutes and snort cocaine. I'm not surprised that they're tired of that. I'm not surprised that they're tired of being used by this system. They don't want to be anybody's slave. They want to have their own nation. They want to have their own pride. And they have a right to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. Do you think that there is a particular kind of ideology on the part of these globalists that we're working with? I mean, we can tie this back again to, you know, the supposed satanic connections or all of this, or if you're seeing that this is simply like an we have puppets in place that are basically, they're decadent. They have their own carnal needs and desires. Many of them are probably drug addicts, the worst, you know, kind of people we could ever imagine. They individually might not be very driven on an ideological, in an ideological sense, but someone in the hierarchy or in the you know, shadow elite, if you will, I think they have political agendas. They want to see something come out of their you know, economic policies and all kinds of things like this. What do you think that would, if we could pinpoint that, if we could kind of profile what kind of world they want, what do you think that would be? Would it be this global liberal world order that we've seen in the last 20 years emerge?
It's very difficult to tell because globalism is beginning to break down. And if they had that level of supreme organization, I can't imagine they would allow it to do so. What I think is that there are different groups that want different things. Theocrats want theocracy so that they can take money from people. Monarchists want monarchy so they can take money from people. The sort of social justice warrior authoritarian left, they want socialist regimes so they can take money from people. Even the right-wing regimes around the world, where they're involved with globalism, they want the same thing. Though the only thing it boils down to is they want money and they want the ability to basically be left alone to do what they want. They just want more wealth, and they want to be able to use that on various luxuries. The only way that all of these groups can have simultaneously this happen is for them not to really care too much about ideology, so long as it brings wealth. It's like, who cares that North Korea is run by national communism? Kim Jong-un has his wealth. He doesn't care if people starve in the process, which they do on a regular basis. He doesn't care. The South Koreans don't care. They've got theirs. Their government has theirs. They just kicked their, president or Prime Minister Park there, and they impeached her. Now they're seeing whether they're going to remove her. She was part of the same kind of corruption scheme. What they try to do is they present a smiling face to people and say, oh, we're so great, we're better together, blah, blah, blah. Oh, world trade's so great. It never trickles down to anybody on any side. The TPP's purpose is a sort of a prime example. The TPP would not have enriched the lives of 99% of the population of any member state, including the Chinese if they had eventually been admitted to it. It wouldn't have benefited us, wouldn't have benefited Malaysia or Japan or any of these groups. The point was to fix the industrial systems, draw them into loose central planning or interventionism, at least at a higher level, so that they could extract more money from the situation, so that they could literally enslave people.
Sticks, do you think that they're going to continue running with the kind of the satanic panic? I mean, that was big in, was that 80s that was really kind of coming up to the surface?
I don't know. That was 83 or 84 through the early
90s. Something like that. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, do you think that they're going to try to steer things like Pizzagate in that direction, or are they just going to try to cover it up and kind of muddy it and just say, this is lies and fake news, let's not touch on any of the proof that you know, a lot of independent investigators, you know, internet sleuths have been doing, and I mean, they've been digging up some pretty interesting stuff. And as you said, the mainstream media, all they've done is basically, without countering any of this proof, they just say, this is lies and it's all made up, these are crazy conspiracy theories, and in fact, we're going to actually shut down your freedom of speech as a result of you trying to address these issues. So which one of these do you think they're going to play out here? What hand?
I think that they'll give it up within a few weeks or months. The reason being people will get desensitized to it. It's like a political campaign. You make a winning message, you use it, you hammer it home a few more times. When people's interest begins to wane, if it does, you drop the issue. Trump did this several times. He used different slogans over time. When he found one that really kept working, he kept using it. Fake news works better than many of the things the media has concocted in its brainless mind in the last few years. They'll keep running with it for a while, but it's going to lose favor. And the super saturation of social media is going to help that happen. People are going to hear it so much for the next few weeks that even people that really believe it are going to stop thinking about it very much. This is another thing that's destroying the legacy media. They need things to be in the news cycle longer because it takes them millions and millions of dollars to put on their day's programming. So if they don't hit it home and they can't keep it in the cycle without having to repeatedly hit it home and dream up new information, new catchphrases, new slogans, the internet can do that real cheap. The internet can do that for a few bucks. You know, there are millions of people. Many of them have very little money, and yet they can go completely viral. The mainstream media, in order to get the same amount of attention, needs to plow millions of dollars into it. The fake news thing was fed to them by the government. I don't believe what the CIA is saying right now. I don't believe what any of these people are saying. I'm sure most people don't. And they're going to lose out in the long run. They're going the way of the dinosaur. It doesn't even ultimately matter. The legacy media is dying. They'll become internet-only over time. They'll begin to wane further. They'll get outcompeted. They'll try to go grassroots. They'll have, like, you know, CNN people or something. They'll have, like,
yeah, they'll already have stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, they'll perpetrate that because it'll work better for a while, but they'll still lose out in the end.
Yeah, that's right. That change can't come fast enough, if you ask me. Now, of course, we have more to talk about, you know, in terms of the real occult, you know, try to help educate people a little bit in terms of some of the issues that you're actually interested in. And maybe in the second segment we can do that. Try to understand the kind of work that you've been into and how that's misconstrued with what we're seeing with things like Pizzagate and try to kind of oppose those two and actually see, you know, what is it that you're into? What is it that truly is esoteric and occult versus what these people is into? You know, the left-hand path, what does all this stuff mean? This is a lot of interesting material right there to dig into. But, you know, we're going to take a break now here for the first segment, Styx. But tell us just a little bit about the YouTube channel, and if you want to give us some of the title of some of the books that you've, you know, translated and some of the things maybe you've written so people know where they can go, basically, to find more information about your work.
Well, my YouTube channel is eclectic, so I speak about politics, current events in general, if anything strange happens in the world, the paranormal, the occult. I'm branching out into more entertaining content now as well. As far as my books go, the titles that would be, I think, most interesting to your audience would be After the Ashes, which is sort of a philosophical post-apocalyptic manual. I wrote that myself. Occult Memetics, which is a shorter booklet on the topic of propaganda as it overlaps with the spiritual, which I also wrote. Most of the edited works that I've ever released are strictly occultism. Now, you can peruse them on the Tarl Warwick Books blog at your leisure. It's all old occult material. But it doesn't have anything to do, strictly speaking, with propaganda. It has to do more with human thought. If you want to find out what the true occult is like, you can search up a great deal of material online, with or without actual physical copies of books, honestly.
Yeah, check out Styx's YouTube channel. A lot of good videos there. We're going to add some links, of course, to some of these works that he mentioned as well. But yeah, we'll take a short break here, folks. So do stay with us. More coming up. Talk to you in just a little bit. Thanks, Styx, for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, folks, we'll continue with Styx, Hex, and Hammer in the second segment. Do join us. I want to get deeper into the esoteric and occult works that he's been involved in the last few years and give you a chance to better understand some of these real esoteric concepts and some of these works as opposed to the kind of cosplay Satanism that we see from these degenerate and decadent elites. I think it's important to spend some time on this issue and give you a better idea of how, you know, these things kind of differentiates. As you know, if you've ever been personally involved in a media story ever, you know that the mainstream media even do cover a subject, they never cover it well. They either always intentionally lie and obfuscate and make things up, or they just misrepresent because simply they just suck at what they do. This is the fake news, of course, that is so much talked about right now. They're trying to hoodwink us into believing that and gaslight us into believing that what we're doing is fake news and what they're doing is the real news. So don't buy it. Don't be fooled by it. Do support independent media. Help us grow like never before. And you can do that by going to our members website, redeyesmembers.com, and signing up for a membership with us. It's only €6 per month. We have from 3 months up to 2 year subscriptions available. And by the way, the euro is like almost equal to the dollar right now. So this is a good time to come aboard. And with a membership, you not only get access to all our radio shows in full, both hours. We have over 1,000 shows and growing each week. We also have video material. We have films. We have Red Eyes TV, a live TV show that we do on the weekends. And we have only done 21 of those shows so far. We are really just getting started. And on top of it, we're bringing on more reporters, correspondents. We're doing more public live broadcasts. So do help us grow with a membership and or a donation, and we can continue to expand and bring you more interesting and important material. So do consider it. But yeah, thanks, folks. We'll be right back after the break. We'll see you on the other side. Stay tuned.